Welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Ed Piskor.
And I'm Tom Scholey.
Jim Rugg is on Important Kayfabe Business today. So we're going to take a look at the issue of Sandman that introduces death to the equation.
Issue 8, yeah. Issue 7's the last part of that, like, seven-part, you know, arc.
But first, Tom, what do you have?
Jack Kirby, The Epic Life of the King of Comics. See Jack Kirby work on some of the earliest Sandman comics in this volume. It's the story of his whole life and all the different comics that he worked on throughout there, and drawn in pencil, just like Jack Kirby worked. And here's Fantastic Four Grand Design. It's the complete story of the Fantastic Four told in one volume. And, you know, you see their birth, death, and their whole career, everything, you know, told in one pithy story. You can also check out my YouTube channel, Total Recall Show, and my Patreon. Go to patreon.com, search Tom Scholey, and you'll see all the comics in progress that I'm working on currently.
Red Room Comics, In the Wild, Murder on the Dark Web, for fun and profit, is the name of the game in Red Room Comics. Every issue is completely self-contained, so if you see an issue, scoop it up. You're going to get a full experience. You're going to come away satisfied, and my hope is that you're curious enough to read another issue. You read them all, you start to get way more understanding of the universe that I'm building here. It's a world-building exercise at the core of it, Tom. You can, if you don't have a good shop in town, go to my link tree in the description below this video. Go to the Fantagraphics website, order these comics. Issue 4 is going to hit the stands mid-September, as well as a reprint of issue number 1. Tens of thousands, almost 100,000 of these suckers are out there in the wild, Tom. Man, super excited about that. It's more popular than the hip-hop stuff.
I keep current with, like, you know, just modern comics. You know, I'll buy stuff off, you know, off the red, superhero stuff, all kinds of stuff. And it is, like, criminal how much you don't get your money's worth from pretty much every, you know, periodical comic that's out there. And then you got Red Room where you get, it's like,
you got to do the opposite of what the hacks do, man. You can get these comics from Fantagraphics by way of the link tree in the description below this video, or hit up my Patreon, patreon.com/Ed Piskor, $3 for the archive there. I'm serializing the comics before they hit paper. We're into a 6th issue on the Patreon as we speak. It's the Rat Queens issue, man. You get to see a full Red Room video play out from start to finish, and it's pretty hairy. No pun intended. You'll see what I mean if you see the comic. $3 for the archive there. All these links in my link tree in the description below this video. And Jimmy can't be with us at this moment. He's busy with some stuff, but hit up his Patreon, patreon.com/JimRugg. He has a lot of out-of-print material in PDF format that you can enjoy there. Hundreds and hundreds of pages of material. I think even his Octobriana like process zine is like a 300-page document that people now cite as like a Bible for Kickstarter comic book production. Also grab his Street Angel Deadliest Girl Alive trade paperback collection from Image Comics that collects all of the Image Street Angel comics that are out there, rapidly approaching out-of-print status. So if you're thinking about it, pull the trigger, man, because you're not going to have another opportunity to do that. And without further ado, let's crack open our Sandmans. You, like myself, don't have the issues of Sandman.
At least not these early. You know,
I have zero issues of this comic.
Oh, okay.
As I was growing up, it's like you had to pick your team in middle school, high school. You couldn't be both, man. You couldn't dig KRS-One and listen to Tool or something like that. You know what I'm saying, man? So you had to pick your crew, and like goth shit seemed like whiny crybaby stuff that I couldn't be any part of. I feel like I would have been torn to bits if I would have
even the Crow.
The Crow definitely is kind of a cool thing, but this stuff I always associated with, like, you know, whiny cry goth stuff.
The Sandman doesn't have a gun.
Right. So let's crack open issue 8.
Yeah, I never committed to a subculture. You know, but I did feel during the 90s and stuff, I did feel an affinity towards like goth stuff. I never went full on, but like, and this was like the thing of the moment, you know?
This comic is full on, baby. Wait till you see Dream and his sister together.
This is the comic that launched 1,000 goths.
Yeah, it's goddamn right it did, man. With the introduction of this Death character, it was such a cool conceit to make your Grim Reaper, you know, a skinny, frail, anemic little girl.
And couldn't be more hip. Like, couldn't be cool. Like, it was like everybody's dream girl in, like, you know, 1990 or 1989 or whatever. And if you look at the end of the previous, how clever is that for a coming up blurb, a death in the family?
That's Neil Gaiman for you, man. Wordplay. So, one of the things I associate with that goth mindset is kind of like an emo mentality and disposition, and boy, are we seeing a whiny.
Yeah, see, goth is like pre-emo, and I feel like emo is like a retroactive recontextualizing of goth.
Yeah, well said, man. Well said. I love this anemic white for the backgrounds of so much of it. Like, you see these rock structures, but you don't exactly, I mean, you see it's set in NYC with that, but it's kind of just floating in kind of like a dream space or something for a little while. I would bet that is in the script. You know, Gaiman seems very, very detailed and thoughtful with his writing on this series. When we really see the girl start talking, she's a magical figure. Poppy, bouncy, bubbly.
And playing completely against your expectations.
Exactly.
And even, I think some of the early issues, I'm not sure that Gaiman had figured out that this is what Death was going to be. I think it's kind of hinted that Death is male, even in one of the early issues, maybe the first issue. But yeah, this is complete, like, you'd almost expect their characters to be reversed. Like, that she's the embodiment of dreams and you know, whimsy, and then he's, you know, the embodiment of death. He's so grim, and no, she's the fun one.
One of those great conceits, man. Like flip expectations.
Yeah.
You know, 180 degrees, man, and see what you have.
And
see this right here. That's like the quintessential. That's just, man, I'm gonna grow my hair that way and paint my face white.
Yeah, it was. What was the band that was it? The Cure. There's like a band that where like the guy looked exactly like that, and then like you have like
Division, Sid, all that shit,
and Sid Barrett from like the earliest incarnation of Pink Floyd is kind of like the touchstone for like the sort of the generation before this, and like again, like Neil Gaiman is like the Lord Dunsany of comics. And this is like full on like Lord Dunsany territory, where it would be like, you know, some completely, you know, like some concept or something is embodied in a, like, you know, success or fame or whatever is like a woman in like a Lord Dunsany short story. So here it's Death.
This is the first interaction that we get to see with these characters, man. So we don't exactly know what the dynamic is off the bat. You have some sense with the things that she says early on, and
she tells him the plot of Mary Poppins,
right?
And kind of gets to actually just, you know, perform a scene from Mary Poppins, and that's part of the fun of this comic too. This guy's been locked up for most of the 20th century, so now you can kind of like, you know, teach him, like, he's like, hey, what's that? And then you can sort of have an info dump where you can explain, like, you know, whatever concept you want to get across to him.
So here he is, about to be a Debbie Downer. The thing that, like, you know, 70% of the readers of this stuff, that as it was coming out at the time, probably totally identified with. And it's page after page. It might be three pages of him basically highlighting everything that we read in the first seven issues.
Yeah, he gives you a recap, but, like, it doesn't feel like exposition. You know, he really is. And
it's well written.
Yeah, it's well written. And he's, you know, telling it to another character who needs to be brought up to speed. And he's kind of making sense of it, too. Like, he hasn't quite figured out what to make of what happened to him in those past six issues. So in the telling to his sister, he's kind of, you know, figuring out how he feels about it. And, like, you know, and this kind of, like, ennui that he's feeling of, like, I had a sense of purpose. I had a goal, a quest, a mission, and now I don't. And this is kind of how the comic is from here on out. The first seven issues are kind of like a tight story arc. And have like a quest, and he's sort of unmoored for the rest of the series. It's kind of just, he's kind of like this depressed, morose figure who doesn't know what to do with himself. And I feel like there's a little bit of autobiography in here too, because I feel like Gaiman must have run out of his plan. Like, his plan is done. He had those first seven issues planned, and he's like, oh, now what the fuck do I do? I had a purpose. I had a quest, and now I got to figure it out. And then this is where we get to the heart of what Sandman becomes. Like, this is what... those first seven issues are atypical. They are not what Sandman's really about. It starts here.
Yeah, well said. And the very first Sandman trade was not this trade. Like, the first one that hit paperback is the next volume.
Mm-hmm.
That tells, you know, that I think it's the Doll's House.
Well, the Doll's House one, like, I had read this first volume way after I'd read some other Sandman stuff. So this story is included in the next volume too. So it's kind of like, it's such like an important story in Sandman that it's worth including at the end of volume one and at the beginning of volume two.
Yeah, that's interesting. And we get to see the dynamic, man. Dream is a little brother. You got to have Death before you have Dream. So she's calling him all kinds of names after he's going on and on about all of his troubles.
Yeah, and this is like the sort of goth psychology is that you're sort of like you're so terrified of death, but you convince yourself that you're not, and that you actually welcome death, you know, and it's kind of like it's parodied in sort of like, you know, the Addams Family movies and stuff like that, that you welcome. But here is a death that you would want. It's like, okay, if death is like this gorgeous, you know, hip girl, like maybe death isn't so bad after all, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you would welcome that. The Mike D artwork, man, feels very just kind of functional. One of the consequences of doing a monthly comic is that you have to be able to hit those marks, man. You got to be able to hit those deadlines. And this, like, you know, I soften the focus of my eyes and I look at this, and this color would be the way the color would react on the page of like the Baxter paper, like Vertigo books that you find in the wild. And it was actually like not attractive to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not attractive artwork to like, as I was a kid, like growing up, and I would see, you know, the Invisibles or like these other things. Like, right. I just wasn't feeling these saturated colors and this type of like kind of scratchy artwork or whatever.
Well, this comic, you know, kind of came into my life at a point where like, okay, I'm too old for superhero comics. So it's kind of, you know, and I feel like it serves that function. And the first seven issues are more or less superhero comics.
They are.
You know, it's like horror super, but it's still superhero. And from here on out, it's not.
You know, I like putting comics in people's hands.
Yeah.
And introducing them to the medium.
Mm-hmm.
Once I size them up and imagine like the things that they might be into, and like curate and cater a comic to them, and I really think that that I would be able to sell a lot of people on this. But some of those people, I think, would be turned off by the artwork.
You think?
Okay. Yeah,
that's
it. Flows.
Yeah,
it flows. It's a pleasure to read. There's a real rhythm to the word choices and everything.
It's literary too. Like, you don't feel like a dummy read it. You feel like, okay, I'm smart. I can handle things. I'm smart reading. You know, it's
I'm your bigger brother. I'm your bigger sister, and I was looked over. Some high contrast photos pasted down onto the page while we get our characters in there. That's an interesting approach, man. Like, from what I understand, Drinnenberg is a slow artist,
mm-hmm.
not a quick guy, man. So doing a monthly gig was taxing him. And that's a way to kind of get some things done.
Some Xerox, Xeroxography. And the way death is handled in this story, like, it reminds me of the Black Racer, who's like the god of death in the New Gods, the way Kirby handled him. I know Gaiman's like a huge Kirby fan, so I don't know if it's a reference to that or if they both have some common thing that they're referencing. But she's sort of like, she's not the one causing their death, but symbolically she is. Like, you know, she comes in, some other thing, you know, your heart attack or whatever is causing your death, but she's kind of taking you by the hand and then taking and showing you like, oh, look, you're dead. And then bringing you into the next life, which in this, you go into the next life in the form of a crow.
Yeah, it's a nice warm bath instead of like, you know, jumping into frigid water.
Yeah, she's like hospice care, or like she's helping you, like, you know, transition into this next phase of your of existence.
And we see, you know, many versions of, you know, maybe five or six deaths in here, and everybody has some relationship, like some different kind of dynamic with death. There's a little fear to begin with, mm-hmm. but they all recognize her as who she is. Like, mm-hmm. oh no, Damn, already?
Yeah, and, you know, like, I read this at an early enough age that this comic gave me all kinds of, like, anxieties or whatever. Because, like, okay, so you have this death here where it's, like, somebody on, like, a comedian getting electrocuted by the, so, like, that started making me afraid of, like, you know, and I think of, like, there's this guy from the Yardbirds or whatever who died getting electrocuted by his electric guitar. So, like, I was not afraid of that stuff until I read this. And it's like, uh-oh.
Now, you said something that, like, the death thing, like, takes the form of a crow. And there's just the sound
the beating
of, like,
of wings.
Right, yeah. But, I mean, like, it's like, now's where you find out. No, okay. And the way I take it is Angel.
Well, yeah, this... You know what? Maybe I'm retroactively reading that into that because I don't know if we see a crow, but in... you know, it's funny thinking of the other goth comics masterpiece, The Crow, but, you know, in later stories, it's established that, oh, when you die, you become a crow. You become one of Odin's crows, which are, you know, become Dream's crows. But you're right. It's like, in the context... If you're just reading the story, and maybe even that was
what he
Damon's
had in
intent was angels, and then later on he thought, oh wait, what if it's crows?
Yeah. I was really hoping that there would be one death where you don't hear about wings, and like what do we hear there?
Oh,
like,
that person's going someplace else.
Yeah.
Well, because you are being, like, he's established multiple different afterlives in this comic cosmology, even up to this point and afterwards. So you might end up in hell or, you know, wherever.
Yeah, yeah, but the river Styx.
But this is your, like, you at least get to spend a little bit of time with death as you know, go on to your next way station.
And it's your personification. Now, she always shows up as the goth chick here, but the way Dream is established with other religions, ideologies, species even, he looks different.
Yeah, to Martians, he looks different.
This is an unforgettable page to me.
Yeah.
This is the page that I always think of whenever I think of this issue.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, talking about anxieties, this gave me anxiety of like, oh shit, if I have a kid and this happens, like, I'll be, oh my God, I, you know, like, so this kind of, like, I was never afraid of SIDS, you know, before I read this, you know, it's like a teenager reading it. All of a sudden, I'm a teenager afraid of SIDS. And I was thinking, looking at this, because, like, what we know, like, a lot of, like, SIDS, a lot of sudden infant death syndrome cases stem from putting your baby on their belly instead of on their back. But here, you know, she's doing everything right. She's putting the baby on the back, and it's still, you know, obviously something else, you know, happens.
I think it's really, like, this dialogue bubble that makes me remember it,
sure,
as opposed to just, like, the death of the kid, because the kid is, like, so articulate. What? That's all I get? What? This sucks.
Yeah, yeah. What a bummer. Like, what a bummer. Yeah, and it is kind of like, you know, like, as a baby, you can't articulate, but of course, your soul is, you know, perfectly articulate.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, that does, you know, and it's a low blow. Like, of course, you're going to freak out your reader if you have, like, a baby die.
Right.
It's a cheap heap.
Perfectly, exactly. Perfectly in line. So we're just death after death after death. They're there. And he's kind of, because he's purposeless at this moment, he's kind of in an in-between phase. He's just kind of hanging out. He's riding shotgun.
I've been here, like, I've been in this state of mind after I finished, like, a big comics project, and I'm just kind of like a lost soul, like, just kind of along for the ride.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a bookend element to it. It's an interesting kind of bookend.
Yeah.
Because it's not the Alan Moore bookend, where it's, like, maybe the same panel at the beginning and the end or something like that. It's scene.
The arch, yeah.
Yeah, it's setting.
The proscenium arch.
Yeah, she you know, we met these soccer players early.
She said, I'll be back for you later. You know, hey, good looking, I'll be back for you later.
And he didn't know, this young boy, didn't know it was going to be that quick. And he's actually confused. Like, he's like, damn, I knew you said we were going to see each other again, but not that quick. And she's like, you know, I got to go show you something. And look at that begging off right there.
Yeah.
Like, that's the very, like, teenage effect.
Yeah,
like, all right, Mom, I'm out of here, Mom.
Yeah, and she's, yeah, about to show you something to freak you out. And, you know, I'm also thinking of this, like, sort of autobiographically for Gaiman, because it's like, okay, I shot my load, I told my big story arc that I had in mind going into this, now I gotta figure out what's next, but you know what? A job's a job. And that's kind of where Dream's at. He's like, it's my job to be the Dream guy, let me just focus on my duties. So it's like, okay, I'm a writer of a comic, let me just sit down, get back to my desk, and, you know, figure out what the next thing's gonna be.
pleasure to reread this, man. Yeah. I'm a big fan of the Sandman run. I like Gaiman's books. Audible recently put together kind of like an audio play version of Sandman. It's about a 15-hour listening experience where Gaiman reads the kind of like captioning, and he's like the sort of ethereal, like he basically is explaining what's in the pictures in his literary way, and there are actors playing the different characters. It's really well done for a guy like you or myself who's sitting at the drawing board, you know, 10 hours a day or something. Bliss to listen to. And that Audible piece goes through the first three trade paperbacks. So it's very, very meaty in its construction. Goes all the way up to the serial killer convention and beyond, man. Get to hear him explain the Corinthian to a listener who's never heard of it before. Pretty excited to get back and do some other Sandman stuff in the future. And kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when new vids are available. Jimmy is on kayfabe duties as we speak. Hit up his Patreon, patreon.com/JimRugg. He has many PDFs of out-of-print materials available there. Hundreds and hundreds of pages of content available to you at his Patreon. Grab Street Angel, Deadliest Girl Alive, trade paperback. It's rapidly getting closer and closer to being out of print. So if you see it, you got to get your hands on it because you are not going to find it again. Tom, what do you have?
I have Jack Kirby, The Epic Life of the King of Comics, Fantastic Four, Grand Design, and check out my YouTube channel, Total Recall Show.
Red Room Comics in the Wild, Murder on the Dark Web for Fun and Profit. I have four issues out there in the wild now. One of those being the Free Comic Book Day comic. The fourth issue of this first arc is going to be out on the stands mid-September 2021, as well as a reprint of issue number one, because you guys bought those things in droves, and I thank you very much for that. You order these comics at Fantagraphics website, in my link tree in the description below this video, or go to the Patreon, patreon.com/edpiscor. $3 for the archive there, and you'll be able to check out all these comics before they hit paper. Kayfabe business, we have a newsletter, put it out every 2 weeks, and it corrals all of the videos that we've done since the previous newsletter. There's a lot of extra information about what we have going on, keeps you up to date with everything, and we do not spam your inbox once every 2 weeks with maybe one or two other special things in between. T-shirts and merchandise are available at the links below the video, too. That keeps the lights on at the Kayfabe compound, man. Much appreciation to everybody who's grabbed a shirt, mug, a tote bag, whatever.
Thong.
We do have baby onesies, and I did see babies in these baby onesies, and I freaking love it. Jimmy is not here with us today, man. He's on those Kayfabe duties, finishing up a big gig.
Yeah.
So, Tom, I'm going to need you to give them the marching orders before we get out of here.
Read more comics.